Blog Talk Radio.
The Initiative Radio Network proudly presents The Ankeny Experience, hosted by Brother Anthony.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Ant Canary Experience. It is September 5, 2017, 8:05 on the East Coast. Welcome to the show. Tonight's show is hopefully it's going to be a good one. We're going to talk about Hurricane Katrina. A lot of you may remember when it came when it hit the United States back in 2005. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about 12 years after Hurricane Katrina hit. Most of the clips I'm going to play tonight say 10 years, but tonight we'll just they're pretty much the same thing. And the reason why I want to talk about this is because last week we had Hurricane Harvey. And then today, I was looking at my job. We can only get one station on TV, unfortunately, and that was the Weather Channel. So all day on the Weather Channel, they have been talking about Hurricane Irma, which is supposed to hit us sometime at the end of the week. And the way they're talking about it now, that's going to be a major. That's a Category 5 thing with that storm all day long. Sitting there watching it, it was just watching to get speeds pick up all day. Last check, it was at 185 miles an hour, which is crazy. Hurricane 5. And it's supposed to hit the Caribbean islands sometime in the next couple of days. Hit Cuba by Thursday or Friday, and possibly hit Florida by Saturday. And for some of you that don't know, I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, and there was a map showing that once it hits Florida, it may come this way by next Tuesday. So next Tuesday, I don't even know if I'm going to be here doing a show or not, depending on what the weather's going to be like. But we'll find out. If you want to call in tonight, please call in 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. And we've got until 10 o'clock. So I just want to talk about a few things. I've got some interesting clips to play. Also, if you lived in or live in the New Orleans area, please call in and give us your stories. I was in Louisiana I was in Louisiana 2015. I was there in March of 2015. I wasn't there for the 10-year anniversary. But I had never been to New Orleans before, but I did get a chance to go down there one day. Had a day off, and I drove down to New Orleans and drove around and looked and took pictures and all that good stuff. And it's a very, very unique city. Had a good time. So if you're from there and you live through this, please call in tonight, 3999-3682, 563-999-3682. And the chat room is open tonight. And I will do a better job of monitoring this. I kind of lost track last week. And and so we did have some people in the chat room. So if you go to the chat room tonight, I will be better on answering questions and acknowledging you there. That was my bad. But we're going to talk about this tonight. And excuse me. And one of the questions that I have that we can answer, what part does government play in natural disasters like this? I have noticed that a lot of the anti-government people, which are particularly Republicans, you know, they're anti-government until they need something from the government. You know, these are the same people. A lot of these people hate the government so much, but then they run for jobs to get. They run for office to get jobs in the government so they can get that government money and those government benefits, but they hate the government. So some people, and we all know that Texas is a mostly Republican state,
So now that they got hit by a natural disaster, will they be asking for help? Since a lot of Republicans like to play that role that, you know, that if you're poor, you're poor on purpose. You don't have a job. You need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. So with, you know, natural disasters like this, will they ask for help? Should they ask for help? We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about that, too, because, you know. And also Florida is a Republican state. So we'll see how they respond. Matter of fact, I think I heard either tomorrow or Thursday they're going to start shutting down schools. They've already told people to start buying supplies and all that kind of stuff. So this is big time, big time. So we're going to talk about that also. So what I'm going to do, like we always do, I'm going to play a commercial. Then we're going to come back in and let's talk about this for the next couple of hours. If you want to join in, 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. We're going to play our commercial. So find it. We're going to play our commercial, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to Pamela Palace, where every customer gets the royal treatment. You may arrive feeling ordinary, but when you leave, you're guaranteed to feel extraordinary. We take pride and honor in serving you and treating you as the queens and kings that you are at Pamela Palace. So come and purchase beautiful scarves, shades, jewelry, etc. for queens. And for kings, we have wallets, bow ties, and much more. Need a royal experience? Well, contact me at Pamela Palace, PamalahPalace, on Facebook or Instagram. And also, PamelaPalace@gmail.com. Thank you so much for your purchases, and please come again.
Okay, so get back to where I got to be. All right. Oops, wrong. All right, so so as you all well know, last week we had Hurricane Harvey, which affected most of south part of southern Texas, and as with most natural disasters, a lot of countries volunteer, you know, time and volunteers to come in and help, supplies, money, things like that. And Mexico offered its help. And we all know that the current president and his administration hates Mexico for whatever reason. As a matter of fact, they you know, did something very jacked up today, but that's not what we're talking about. But if you've been listening to the news, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So Mexico offered help, since they are on our southern border and they are a neighbor. They offered help, you know, and then again too, Texas used to be part of Mexico, so, you know. They offered help, and did our so-called president take the help? Well, I don't know. Let's play this clip and find out if he took the help or not.
As large areas in the state of Texas are still being inundated with floods and heavy rains, dozens of inches of rain are still predicted in the forecast for the remainder of this week for those particular areas. So we can only expect the flooding at this point to get worse. Countless people around the United States have made their way down to Texas. They've been taking their boats, doing whatever they can to help people out, sending supplies, donating to the Red Cross. And the country of Mexico has offered aid to the United States to help with these efforts, both with the rescue efforts and with the rebuilding and mitigation programs. However, Donald Trump, the White House, this administration has not yet decided if they're going to accept that help from the government of Mexico. Now, keep in mind, during Hurricane Katrina, the country of Mexico sent over members of their military to help rescue people and to help rebuild and deliver supplies. Mexico was right there for us during that catastrophe, and they're offering the same kind of aid following Hurricane Harvey. And Donald Trump, who's so bitter about his border wall, can't decide whether or not he wants to accept their aid. As of right now, and this number continues to go up as floodwaters continue to push forward, at least 9 people have died in this catastrophe. As many as 350,000 people will be displaced because of this floodwater as it stands right now. The further it goes, the more people that will be displaced, some of them permanently. There are many areas that will not be able to rebuild. This is going to cost billions of dollars, and it's already projected to be the costliest natural disaster in the U.S. history. So why on earth would Donald Trump not want to accept any form of aid that any country is offering to the United States at this point? Well, there's a simple reason. Because at the same time Mexico's telling us they want to send aid, they're also reminding the United States that under no circumstances will they ever pay for a border wall. So Donald Trump needs to stop talking about that. Because during the storm, Saturday, Sunday, that's actually what Donald Trump was tweeting about. Getting Mexico to pay for that wall one way or another, either by paying us back or some other asinine way that Donald Trump can imagine. It's not going to happen. They don't want the wall. You do. You should be the one paying for it, and not with taxpayer money. If you're so rich, why don't you go ahead and start construction yourself out of your own pocket, since you seem to be taking taxpayers' money to spend at your own golf resorts anyway. We've already paid enough for your bullcrap. I think you can foot the bill on this one if you truly wanted it. But the bottom line is this. America is facing a natural disaster right now, the likes of which we have not seen in modern history. And Donald Trump is bitching about a border wall. Mexico's offering to help us. So I ask you this. Who's the real bad guy in this situation? Is it those pesky Mexicans that Donald Trump wants to keep out of our country? Or is it the guy who's refusing aid from a country that's trying to help us as American citizens drown? If you're thinking about subscribing to our...
Okay. That was a clip from last week. That was before Irma started to form. And then today, found out that there's another hurricane right after this one. Hurricane Jose. What a coinkydink. We get a hurricane with a Mexican name. But, you know, I'm not trying to make light of what's going on, but this hurricane is from the last time I looked at a map, is right. I mean, it's kind of like Irma is going to hit, and then Jose is going to be right after. And this is, this is going to be, I don't think anybody's ever seen anything like this before. This is really, really, really messed up. So just a second. I'm going to give a little bit of background on Hurricane Katrina. I've got some interesting clips to play, and then I'll take your phone calls, comments, questions in the chat room. But let me give out that number again. 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. If you want to call in, please do. We have until 10 o'clock. Just make sure the chat room is still good. Okay. All right. So let's jump right into this. See what I say. Here we go. All right. Give me some background on Hurricane Katrina. Let's see. Hurricane Katrina was an extremely destructive and deadly tropical cyclone that was the costliest natural disaster and one of the 5 deadliest hurricanes in the history of the United States. It was the 11th named storm and the 5th hurricane of the 2005 Atlantic hurricane season. The storm originated over the Bahamas on August 23rd from an interaction between a tropical wave and the remnants of Tropical Depression 10. Early the following day, the new depression intensified into Tropical Storm Katrina. Cyclone headed generally westward toward Florida and strengthened into a hurricane only 2 hours before making landfall at Hallandale Beach and at Ventura, I think I'm saying that right, on August 25th, after very briefly weakening into a tropical storm. Katrina emerged from the Gulf of Mexico on August 26th and began to rapidly deepen. The storm strengthened to a Category 5 hurricane over the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico, but weakened before making its second landfall as a Category 3 hurricane on August 29th in southeast Louisiana. The storm caused severe destruction along the Gulf Coast, from central Florida to Texas, much of it due to the storm surge and levee failure. Severe property damage occurred in coastal areas such as Mississippi beachfront towns, where boats and casino barges ran buildings, pushed cars and houses inland. Water reached 6 to 12 miles from the beach. The storm is the third most intense United States landfalling tropical cyclone behind the 1935 Labor Day hurricane, Hurricane Camille, in 1969. Overall, at least 1,245 people died in the hurricane. Subsequent floods, making it the deadliest United States hurricane since the 1928 Okeechobee, Total property damage was estimated at $108 billion, roughly four times the damage wrought by Hurricane Andrew in 1992. But that's until this weekend, because according to what they're saying, Hurricane Irma might be the, if it hits at a category, it could be a whole lot of damage. Like I said, it formed on August 23rd, 2005, dissipated August 31st, 2005. Highest winds were at 175 miles an hour. Hurricane Irma today was at 185 miles an hour. So already Hurricane Irma is 10 miles, got 10 miles on it already. It was between 1,245 to 1,836 fatalities, $108 billion in damage. It affected the Bahamas, South Florida, Central Florida, Cuba, Louisiana, especially Greater New Orleans, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida Panhandle, and most of Eastern North America. One of the big things about this hurricane was the time that it took the president and other government officials to react to the hurricane. And that's going to be played in some of these clips. But it was just, it was pretty bad. And I think now, because of that, a lot of the hurricanes that we have today, a lot of the people are reminding themselves of what happened during Katrina, so they don't want to make the same mistakes that was made for that. but with Harvey, people were saying, they were asking, they're telling people to evacuate, but a lot of people didn't have places to go, couldn't afford it. And that was one of the things with Katrina. A lot of people were poor, couldn't get out, didn't have anywhere to go. And that's why they pretty much went through what they went through. And were greatly affected. And if you remember the pictures showing from the hurricane, people had to end up staying in the football stadium. And if you've ever seen a football stadium close up, like I did, it is huge. I mean, I didn't go inside, but I saw it from the outside, and it is huge. And you have to imagine people staying there and sleeping on the floor, you know, and then the levees broke, and that just flooded the city of New Orleans. Let's see, there were 2 people died in Alabama, 14 people died in Florida, 2 people died in Georgia, 1 person died in Kentucky. Between 986 to 1577 died in Louisiana, 238 in Mississippi, and 2 in Ohio, and between 10 to 66 people were missing. Let's see what else I got on this. But it was just, you know, a matter of fact, and the last clip I'm going to play, and some of you may remember this, but I'm going to play the clip that Kanye West made famous when he talked about George Bush. I meant to bring this up. I'm going to bring this up before I forget. The president at the time of Katrina, George Bush, not President Obama. Now, I know Trump said that he loves his uneducated supporters, but please, there's this cool thing called Google. You can do it on your laptop, you can do it on your computer, you can do it on your phone, you can do it on your tablet, you can do it. Hell, you can do it on your Xbox. This cool thing where you can put information in and it'll look it up and it'll research for you and it'll give you all kinds of stuff. Obama was not the president during Katrina. Bush was. So when you have very uneducated people spreading rumors, like, please. I mean, we already know that Trump has got this major hard-on for Obama. I don't know why. But for his people to sit and blame this on Obama is pretty whack. But, you know, what do you expect? I mean, how are you going to sit down? Seem like me, you want to blame everything on the black guy. Blame everything on the black guy. Blame it on the black guy. Blame it on the black guy. Obama was not the president. This happened in 2005. Obama did not get into office. Was not elected until 2008, did not get in office until 2009. So almost a 3-4 year difference, 5 year almost, you know. So please. Here's a chart right here. Let me read you this chart. This is probably subject to change after next week. Costliest U.S. Atlantic hurricanes. Let's go from 10 and work our way up. Number 10, Matthew. Matter of fact, Matthew hit my hometown pretty bad last year at $10 billion. And I was talking to somebody at work today. One of the saddest things, I think I might have talked about this before, but my hometown, there were parts of my hometown that were flooded and couldn't get through them by car or anything else. So they had a lot of the parts that were blocked off. And I went down to go visit family and friends and everything. And the worst thing, and you see this on TV now with Harvey, people, when they're cleaning out their houses and they're piling all their belongings outside on the curb. And I think I shed a couple of tears because it was so sad. It was so sad. You know, these are people living in these houses for years, and I know that those are just things. They're just items. You can replace items. You know, you can't replace your life, but it's pretty sad when you drive down the street and you just see, you know, everything that these people own on the side of the road, you know, waiting to get picked up to be thrown away. It's pretty sad. Number 9. Rita, also 2005, $12 billion. Charlie, 2004, $15.1 billion. Number 7 is Irene, 2008, 2011 at 15.6. Number six is Ivan, 2004, 18.8. Number five is Wilma, 2005, 21 billion. Number four is Andrew, 1992, 26.5 billion. Number three is Ike, 2008, at 29.5 billion. Number two is Sandy. I remember Superstorm Sandy, 2012, 71 billion. Numero uno, Trina, came in at 2005 and $108 billion. And I, like I said, I think that number is going to change after the end of this week, according to what they're talking about on the Weather Channel. And all these names have been retired, so they're not going to be used again. All these names sound like old people, sound like old relatives, like Wilma. You know, who names their kid Wilma? Ike. Uncle Ike, Aunt Wilma, Aunt Irene. So, those are the costliest storms that we've ever had in this country, which is pretty amazing. And had one, two, had three from 2005 by itself that are in this list. One, two, three in this list. 2005. So I'm going to play some clips, give you a little bit more information on Katrina, and hopefully we won't have to go through that again, but, you know, we can't control the weather, unfortunately. And then a lot of people saying that this is due to global warming. I don't know, but I have to believe that, you know, things that we are doing to this planet, I mean, it is kind of believable that, you know, some of the things that we do to the planet are affecting it, and it only makes sense. So we're going to start to play these clips and do a little bit of talking. 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. And this first clip, is an interesting clip. This goes step by step, day by day, of Hurricane Katrina, from when it formed to when it hit. And this is day by day, Hurricane Katrina.
Over the Bahamas forms Tropical Depression 12, a swirling band of wind and rain. It picks up moisture and heat, and with them, speed. As its winds reach 39 miles per hour, it becomes a tropical storm and is given a name, Katrina. Along the coast of Florida, a hurricane warning is announced, the first of many. By 4 o'clock, Katrina grows into a Category 1 hurricane. With 80-mile-an-hour winds, it sideswipes through Florida, just north of Miami. By midnight, over a million homes lose power. 11 lives are lost. Katrina hooks north into the Gulf of Mexico and quickly picks up speed and size, becoming a Category 2 hurricane. Locals try to safeguard their property as the governors of Louisiana and Mississippi declare states of emergency. As its winds reach 115 miles an hour, Katrina turns into a Category 3 hurricane, with New Orleans in its sights. City officials urge those who can to evacuate. Traffic jams snarl the highways as up to 18,000 cars an hour try to make it out of harm's way. Katrina grows into a Category 4 hurricane. A few hours later, it reaches Category 5, the highest possible ratings. Winds exceed 175 miles an hour. All residents in New Orleans are ordered to evacuate. For those without the means to leave, the city sets up shelters. Many locals simply hunker down in their homes and prepare to weather the storm. As dawn breaks, Katrina's wind speeds slow back down to a Category 4 hurricane. It makes landfall at 6 a.m., 60 miles southeast of New Orleans. Its 140-mile-an-hour winds pummel the coasts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. The eye of the storm moves just east of New Orleans, but the city is not spared. New Orleans sits below sea level, surrounded by Lake Pontchartrain and the Mississippi River. High flood walls called levees keep the water at bay. But by 8 a.m., there are reports that a levee has broken. The waters of Lake Pontchartrain rush in. Levees in three locations are breached. 80% of the city is flooded. Some neighborhoods are submerged under 20 feet of water. As night falls, Katrina slows to a tropical storm. It heads north through Tennessee and into Kentucky. The damage is immense. In Mississippi, the hurricane has crushed coastal towns. Hundreds are feared dead. New Orleans lies in shambles. It is left without power, without drinking water. Many residents are stranded on rooftops, desperate to be rescued. Bodies float in the streets. Looting breaks out. Thousands make their way to the Superdome and Convention Center in hopes of being evacuated. The waters stop rising, but the city is in chaos. Looting and violence are so widespread that police are forced to stop rescue operations to combat the problem. Conditions at the Superdome and Convention Center are increasingly unsafe. People lack food, water, and basic sanitation. There are reports of violent assaults. Altogether, over 50,000 people wait for the buses that will evacuate them. For most, the buses do not come. The National Guard arrives in force and restores order. They bring convoys of food and water. Evacuations begin in earnest. By the following Monday, the Army Corps of Engineers plugs major holes in the levees. Draining pumps go back in operation, and the waters subside. The residents of the Gulf slowly return, their lives forever changed by the power of a hurricane.
So that was day by day of Hurricane Katrina. And while I was doing the research on this, I came across a couple of interesting clips. I'm going to play in just a second. And one of them talks about gentrification. Is New Orleans being gentrified? Because most of New Orleans is black people live in that area. So is New Orleans being gentrified? And is it being done on purpose? I'm going to play a clip that talks about that. And I had a clip that I played about a month ago about we were talking about gentrification. Is it going on in New Orleans? And also another clip I'm going to play that says that New Orleans lost about half of its black population. Because you have to remember that when all of this was going down, people were evacuating and they were trying to find places to stay. A lot of people never went back. A lot of people never went back to New Orleans once they left. You know, a lot of people couldn't afford to go back. Matter of fact, when I was working in Baton Rouge, I was talking to some of the people there, and I was, you know, interested in, you know, about what was going on because, like, it was coming up on 10 years of the anniversary. Talking to some people, and you know, and they were saying that a lot of people, when they left, you know, they were going to Houston. You know, they were just getting out, trying to get out of the city, and they were going just anywhere. A lot of people left, went north, went, you know, just try to get out. That a lot of people didn't stay. I mean, a lot of people did not go back. They stayed where they were. You know, so the clip, I'm going to play that clip later, but, you know, said that they, you know, half of the black population left. They just left and they never returned. So pretty interesting stuff. 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. Want to call in? The chat room's open. So, you know, we are talking about that tonight. We get into, you know, and talk to brothers in the chat room. So, you know, I want to acknowledge him for getting on. This next clip I'm going to play is not a long clip, but it goes back to talking about what I just mentioned about gentrification. A lot of people seem to think that, that, you know, once a disaster like this happens, you know, you rebuild to as much as you can like it was, if that's possible. But then people have been asking the question, you know, are they rebuilding or is New Orleans being gentrified? So this clip hopefully will answer that question. So play this clip. Be right back.
What did it look like when you were growing up? Because this is brand new.
Nothing like this. This is Disneyland compared to how we grew up.
We're here in New Orleans, and it's been 10 years since Hurricane Katrina, one of the biggest natural disasters in U.S. history, not to mention a massive political failure. And today, some places, like here in the Lower Ninth Ward, still look like this. But other places in New Orleans look a whole lot different lately. This is bigwig developer Prez Kabakoff. He has a $1 billion vision to turn his hometown into an Afro-Caribbean Paris.
You're like an urban voodoo doctor. You're reviving.
Deeper than
part
you
by
think.
Part. Now, who are you hoping to attract to condos and places like these, downtown, new, luxury?
We've got lots of people like you that are coming to town, 30,000 of them. It took many years to make people comfortable, but now this urban revitalization, not only in New Orleans, but all over the country, is becoming a movement.
Now, are you actually seeing New Orleans natives moving into places like these?
Absolutely.
But that's not what we've heard. We visited one of Kabakoff's mixed-income properties with Kevin. Kevin grew up in housing projects here before the city tore them down after Katrina. In fact, only a fraction of public housing residents were able to move into the new mixed-income developments like this one.
So you don't see the jobs coming along with your development?
No, not at all, especially not the jobs that are paying, because most of the jobs that are part of development are not going to residents. They're going to people that are coming in from out of town.
How does that make you feel that it took Katrina to then get this, to get pressure washed,
it
brick?
It makes you feel horrible. It makes you feel like you weren't worth the investment.
Housing advocates say the city didn't have a sufficient plan to help restore homes and keep housing accessible.
New Orleans is a city that contains a majority of renters. Because rents have increased so much, the lower income people no longer have access to the neighborhoods in which they've traditionally lived.
Neil is trying to help curb rapid gentrification by keeping locals in their neighborhoods. He uses tax incentives to flip historic houses and then rents them at affordable rates.
Isn't it just a stylistic difference? Some like more green.
No, this house is about to fall down. It couldn't have made it many more months. A lot of the homes we renovate, we try to keep as rental housing because there is a rental market in New Orleans. Not everybody is going to be a homeowner, and so the niche that we try to fill is for the residents that can't afford their own home but that want to live in their neighborhood where they grew up, or a historic New Orleans neighborhood. And so we cater to those folks and try to keep them in neighborhoods that are gentrifying, such as this one.
But such efforts are rare. We met Ansel in Treme, the oldest black neighborhood in the country.
Now you look at the makeup of the neighborhood, unfortunately gentrification is happening all over the city, and residents from this area being pushed to New Orleans East.
Didn't you get a cool gourmet coffee shop that has, like, you know, homemade granola bars and stuff?
You know, people from the residents here weren't worried about that. People wanted to come home so they could just live their normal lifestyle.
To get a real taste of gentrification, we checked out St. Rock Market, a chic foodie paradise that sticks out like a sore thumb in what used to be a predominantly poor black neighborhood. This is nice! Do they have, like, $3 po' boys here? There's, like, no black customers here. I thought there was one, but I think she's filling out a job application. Back in the Lower Ninth Ward, another black neighborhood that was devastated by the storm, Burnell has used his life savings to restore the only place to buy food for miles. He's now raising money to open more services, like a laundromat.
I'm trying to raise $80,000. Now, to some people, that's a drop in the bucket. Someone, let's say, like a Donald Trump, he'll blow that in the night. But to the Lower Ninth Ward, that would change everything. And when people see New Orleans, they see Bourbon Street, they see the French Quarters, but they don't see what's going on right here. And if we wouldn't have done this here, we wouldn't have had nothing.
Okay, so they were talking about gentrification in that clip. Let me give up the call-in number. We're going to get to something else. 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. Now, what I'm going to do, and just let me see if I can find it. I have a request. One of my regular listeners wants me to talk about this that I didn't think about before, and I'm glad he brought it up, and I did find an article about it. And you may not have known about it. I just pulled it up. The one thing that we forget to think about whenever we have natural disasters like this are people in prison. What happens to them while all this is going on around us? Well, I just found this article. See how long it is, because I'm going to probably read most of it. I found this article. It's on the Human Rights Watch. It's dated September 21st, 2005. And the title of this article is New Orleans Prisoners Abandoned to Floodwaters. Officers deserted a jail building, leaving inmates locked in cells. And I'm going to read this to you. As Hurricane Katrina began pounding New Orleans, the Sheriff's Department abandoned hundreds of inmates in prison in the city's jail, Human Rights Watch said today. Inmates in Templeman 3, one of several buildings in the Orleans Parish prison compound, reported that as of Monday, August 29, there were no correctional officers in the building, which held more than 600 inmates. These inmates, including some who were locked in ground floor cells, were not evacuated until Thursday, September 1st, 4 days after floodwaters in the jail had reached chest level. Of all the nightmares during Hurricane Katrina, this must be one of the worst, said Corrine Carey, researcher from Human Rights Watch. Prisoners were abandoned in their cells without food or water for days as floodwaters rose toward the ceiling. Human Rights Watch called on the U.S. Department of Justice to conduct an investigation into the conduct of the Orleans Sheriff's Department, which runs the jail, and to establish the fate of the prisoners who had been locked in the jail. The Louisiana Department of Public Safety and Corrections, which oversaw the evacuation, and the Orleans Sheriff's Department should account for the 517 inmates who are missing from the list of people evacuated from the jail. Kerry spent 5 days in Louisiana conducting dozens of interviews with inmates evacuated from Orleans Parish Prison. Corrections officers, state officials, lawyers, and their investigators who had interviewed more than 1,000 inmates evacuated from the prison. The sheriff of Orleans Parish, Marlon Gussman, did not call for help in evacuating the prison until midnight on August 29th. A State Department of Corrections and Public Safety spokeswoman told Human Rights Watch. Other parish prisons, she said, had called for help on the previous Saturday and Sunday. The evacuation of Orleans Parish Prison was not completed until Friday, September 2nd. According to officers who worked at two of the jail's buildings, Templeman 1 and 2, they began to evacuate prisoners from those buildings on Tuesday, August 30th, when the floodwaters reached chest level inside. These prisoners were taken by boat to the Broad Street Overpass Bridge and ultimately transported to correctional facilities outside New Orleans. But at Templeman 3, which housed about 600 inmates, there was no prison staff to help the prisoners. Inmates interviewed by Human Rights Watch varied about when they last remember seeing guards at the facility, but they all insisted that there were no corrections officers in the facility on Monday, August 29th. A spokeswoman for the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Department told Human Rights Watch she did not know whether the officers at Templeman 3 had left the building before the evacuations. According to inmates interviewed by Human Rights Watch, they had no food or water from the inmates' last meal over the weekend of August 27th and 28th until they were evacuated on Thursday, September 1st. By Monday, August 29th, the generators had died, leaving them without lights and sealed in without air circulation. The toilets backed up, creating an unbearable stench. They left us to die there, said Dan Bright, an Orleans Parish Prison inmate, told Human Rights Watch at Rapides Parish Prison, where he was sent after the evacuation. As the water began rising on the first floor, prisoners became anxious and then desperate. Some of the inmates were able to force their cell doors open. Some of the inmates were able to force open their cell doors held by inmates held in the common area. All of them, however, remained trapped in the locked facility. The water started rising. It was getting to here, said Aaron Kelly, an inmate from Templeman 3, as he pointed to his neck. We were calling down to the guys in the cells under us, talking to them every couple of minutes. They were crying. They were scared. The one that I was cool with, he was saying, I'm scared. I feel like I'm about to drown. He was crying. Some inmates from Templeman 3 have said they saw bodies floating in the floodwaters as they were evacuated from the prison. A number of inmates told Human Rights Watch that they were not able to get everyone out of their cells. Inmates broke jail windows to let air in. They also set fire to blankets and shirts and hung them out of the windows to let people know they were still in the facility. Apparently, at least a dozen inmates jumped out of the windows. We started to see people in T3 hanging shirts on fires out the windows, Brooke Moss, an Orleans Parish Prison officer, told Human Rights Watch. They were waving them. Then we saw them jumping out of the windows. Later on, we saw a sign. I think somebody wrote help on it. As of yesterday, signs reading help us and one man down could still be seen hanging from a window in the third floor of Templeman 3. Several corrections officers told Human Rights Watch there was no evacuation plan for the prison, even though the facility had been evacuated during the floods in the 1990s. It was complete chaos, said a corrections officer with more than 30 years of service at Orleans Parish Prison. When asked what he thought happened to the inmates at Templeman 3, he shook his head and said, "Ain't no telling what happened to those people." At best, the inmates were left to fend for themselves, said Carey. At worst, some may have died. Human Rights Watch was not able to speak directly with Orleans Parish Sheriff Marlon Gussman or the ranking official in charge of Templeman 3. A spokeswoman for the Sheriff's Department told Human Rights Watch that search and rescue teams had gone to the prison, and she insisted that nobody drowned, nobody was left behind. Human Rights Watch compared an official list of all inmates held at Orleans Parish Prison immediately prior to the hurricane with the most recent list of evacuated inmates compiled by the State Department of Corrections and Public Safety, which was entitled All Offenders Evacuated. However, the list did not include 517 inmates from the jail, including 130 from Templeman 3. Many of the men held at jail had been arrested for offenses like criminal trespass, public drunkenness, or disorderly conduct. Many had not even been brought before a judge and charged, much less convicted. So that was an article from September 21st, 2005. That's pretty messed up. Pretty messed up. Please call in 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. And I think I just heard a rumble of thunder in the background. They are calling for rain tonight that I just forgot about. I don't remember them calling for thunderstorms. So let me just check right quick. I could have sworn that was thunder in the background. Okay. So we're going to be getting some rain overnight. Interesting. Okay. All right. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play clip number 3, which is not a long clip, but this clip is entitled Hurricane Katrina, Still an Embarrassment for Bush, because as you all know and remember, it seemed to take Bush forever to respond. I don't think we had that problem with Hurricane Harvey, but I was looking at the news earlier today, and there still seem to be some people still waiting for help, but it doesn't seem to be as bad as Katrina was, which is a good thing. So clip number 3, still an embarrassment. Hurricane Katrina, still an embarrassment for Bush.
For more on the 10-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, we're joined from the heart of New Orleans by historian Douglas Brinkley, the author of The Great Deluge, about the disaster. Mr. Brinkley, I want to start with, help us apportion the blame for the disaster of Hurricane Katrina. Who was at fault and how much were they at fault?
Well, George W. Bush did a terrible leadership job during that crisis. He kind of acted like nothing was happening wrong for the first days. He had been in San Diego where he played air guitar, and then he did the famous flyover, being very detached from the devastation, and that photograph that damaged his presidency immensely of him just peering down at the abyss. Then when he did come back and land in the Gulf South, he put his arm around Michael Brown saying, "Brownie, you did a heck of a job." That soundbite became the Bush soundbite. It was about dysfunction. It was even connected in a way to the war in Iraq. The Bush administration saying things are going great when things weren't going great. So he was very poor during that leadership moment. FEMA did terrible, as we all know. But the Coast Guard was amazing. some individuals in the Louisiana National Guard did a great job, but it was really Louisianans saving Louisiana and Mississippians saving Mississippi in those crucial first 72 hours. Mayor Nagin went in hiding. Now he's in jail on the 10th anniversary. William Jefferson, the congressman from Louisiana, went to jail for corruption. So there's just dysfunction at the federal, state, and local level everywhere you looked.
And there was, but there was a lot of dysfunction before the weather ever hit. I mean, in terms of the levees and the Corps of Engineers, just as people think about, you know, there's the criticisms of President Bush and the kind of the public relations aspect of this, which we can get back to. But in terms of the nuts and bolts of the levees breaking and that kind of thing, what should people have in mind as they look back on this incident?
They should be angry at the Army Corps of Engineers for building shoddy levees. It was a disastrously built system. It breached in over 50 different places. The media naturally covered the three major breaches, and the city of New Orleans filled up like a bowl with water. 80% of the city flooded. The Army Corps did a terrible job. And also these boondoggle engineering projects in the Gulf South, a thing called the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet, that was supposed to connect the Gulf of Mexico to the port of New Orleans and the Mississippi River. It's closed now on the 10th anniversary. But in lawsuits, it shows that the Army Corps for Mr. Goh has to pay $3 billion. It just came out this week, $3 billion for wetlands restoration. So the ragged boot heel of Louisiana has been terribly mismanaged. It's an ecological disaster zone. And it's over-engineering and over-thinking about man controlling of nature. We're killing the wetlands down here.
You know, in this situation, you had people who'd been warning about this kind of thing perhaps happening to New Orleans before Hurricane Katrina hit. As you say, the Army Corps of Engineers failed on this. What's your sense about the government's ability to take on big, long-term challenges where there isn't an immediate threat? Has anyone learned the lesson here that if you don't take these possible threats seriously, eventually this kind of thing could happen?
I think a lot of lessons have been learned. I mean, for one example, Mayor Nagin kept all of the school buses, the rescue buses, below sea level. So when Katrina hit, all of the buses drowned. We know better. Do not keep your rescue vehicles in a below sea level situation when a hurricane comes. Pull your assets out of the bowl, and when the storm comes, you at least can move people from facilities like the Superdome or the Convention Center. The Coast Guard had learned that previously, and that's why they had done such a good job. But every community in America needs to make the operation protocol make sense. And it's usually the mayor that's in charge of that. But we had an utter breakdown in Katrina, and hopefully our country learned some lessons from it. Hopefully the billions poured in down here, the levee system can sustain at least a Category 3 storm. Some people are skeptical, but we'll never know unless another storm comes.
All right, Douglas Brinkley, thank you so much for being with us. Sorry about the satellite hiccups there for a moment, but we very much appreciate you being with us.
Okay, so let me just see. While I'm got it on here, let's just go and get some information on the latest update on Hurricane Harvey. See where this falls in on this. Let's see. Give you a little bit of information about Harvey. Harvey was the first major hurricane to make landfall in the U.S. since Wilma in 2005, ending a 12-year period with no major hurricanes making landfall in the country. In a four-day period, many areas received more than 40 inches of rain as the system meandered over eastern Texas and adjacent waters, causing catastrophic flooding with peak accumulations of 51.88 inches. Harvey is the wettest tropical cyclone on record. The resulting floods inundated hundreds of thousands of homes, displaced more than 30,000 people, and prompted more than 17,000 rescues. The eighth named storm, third hurricane, and the first major hurricane of the 2017 hurricane season, Harvey developed from a tropical wave to the east of the Lesser Antilles, reaching tropical storm status on August 17th. The storm crossed through the windward islands on the following day, passing just north just south of Barbados and later near St. Vincent. Upon entering the Caribbean Sea, Harvey began to weaken due to moderate wind shear and disintegrated into a tropical wave north of Colombia early on August 19th. The remnants were monitored for regeneration as it continued west-northwestward toward the Caribbean and the Yucatan Peninsula before redeveloping over the Bay of Campeche. On August 23rd, Harvey began to rapidly intensify on August 24th, regaining tropical storm status and becoming a hurricane later that day. While the storm moved generally south northwest, Harvey's intensification phase stalled slightly overnight from August 24th to August 25th. However, Harvey soon resumed strengthening and quickly became a major hurricane and attained Category 4 intensity later that day. Hours later, Harvey made landfall near Rockport, Texas at peak intensity. Harvey has caused at least 66 confirmed deaths, one in Guyana and 65 in the United States. Harvey is the worst disaster in Texas history, and the recovery is expected to take many years. Economic losses are estimated at between 70 to 190 billion, with a large portion of the losses sustained by uninsured homeowners. Formed August 17, 2017, and dissipated September 2nd. Its highest winds were 130, 66 confirmed dead. They're still counting the damage. Right now is up to $70 billion, but it's still ongoing, so we won't have that figure for a while. And did hear that the gas, like I said, I live in Raleigh, and I did hear that the gas pipe, the pipeline, is back to normal, so the gas prices should start coming down. We have gas here at around $2.66. So it jumped up considerably. So we're going to see how quick it takes for the prices to drop. I think they're probably going to stay like that for a while until these next two hurricanes come through. I'm just guessing. But you know, at one time it was $2.19. I think one gas station I saw the gas was at $1.96. And I remember there was a story I want to tell before I keep talking about this. I was driving through town Friday, and I was driving down the street, and it's one of the major roads here, and there was two gas stations. And they were both on the corners where they faced each other. And I thought this was interesting. One gas station had gas at $2.19, if I'm not mistaken. $2.19 a gallon. The other gas station directly across the street from this gas station had gas at $2.69. Guess which gas station had lines coming out the yin yang, people getting gas? I will give you one guess. I remember now, one had gas at $2.19, the other gas had gas at $2.69. So I drove by that, and I probably should have stopped at that gas station and just got a little bit of gas. But there was nobody at the gas station at $2.69. There was a line at the gas station at $2.19. And I'm sitting there driving and I just got this thought that just popped in my head. See, these people, they control the gas prices. I mean, every time you get a natural disaster like this, all of a sudden you see the prices go up on everything. Prices go up on gas. Prices go up on bread. The prices go up on milk, on water. And they had a Best Buy store down in Texas that was selling water. I think they're like the big 24 bottles for $42 a pack. And you could probably get them for what, $5 maybe. But it's like every time this happens, all of a sudden gas prices shoot through the roof. You know, I remember that we had there was something going on. I think it might have been Gulf War, one of those wars. Something was going on, and drove by a gas station, $5 for a gallon of gas. And I think somebody reported him, and all of a sudden they dropped the price. And matter of fact, when we was going through all this stuff last week, the governor put something out about people gouging, price gouging, and all that kind of stuff. So I just thought that was amazing that, you know, and when I say directly across the street, I'm literally mean these two gas stations were right across the street. They had a road that went right between both of them. 269 for one, 219 for the other, and they would boo-coo people out of the 219. And then drive around town, and then, you know, it ranges from like 249, it's up there, 249, 259, 269. The highest I've seen was like 269. So, and also the thing that amazes me is that it takes them no time for these gas prices to go up during a national disaster, a war, or whatever. It takes them no time for the prices to go up. But as far as them coming down, all of a sudden they just take their sweet time coming down. You know, it takes them, you know, you could go to one gas station early in the day and it's at one price, drive by that gas station, you know, you go to work and work a shift. By that same station 8 hours later, and all of a sudden the price is 20 cents more than it was before you drove past it earlier in the day. But when it's time for them to bring these prices down, they seem to take their sweet-ass time getting them down. That's what everything else, you know. Price of milk, when it goes up, you know, they take their time bringing it down. So it's like these people, they know what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. And I'm sure the same thing is going on in Florida right about now. Everything that was not so, you know, didn't cost so much. Now all of a sudden, when you get stuff like this, prices jump through the roof, you know, which is pretty bad. But hey, that's capitalism for you. 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. We've got about 45 minutes left. I've got a couple of clips that I want to play. One's a long one, and the other one is that infamous Kanye West, when he went off on Bush and said on national TV that Bush doesn't care about black people. And I'll probably remember this before I play it. And this was during a telethon. Oh, it is raining. Yeah, it's raining pretty good out there. You can hear the raindrops hit. Kanye West was on stage with Mike Myers. And if you don't know who Mike Myers is, he plays Austin Powers in the Austin Powers movie. And also, I didn't remember this part, but Chris Tucker was in this telethon also, but he was in a different part of the studio, I think. But when Kanye went on his thing, Mike Myers was standing right next to him, and he was pretty much in shock by what Kanye West had said. And you can look that clip up on YouTube. It is pretty, I mean, when I say funny, I don't mean funny, but it's just that Kanye just went, he just lost it. And he lost it for a good reason. And that's the kind of thing when stuff like that happens unexpectedly, you know, it catches people off guard. But I'm going to play that in just a second. And there is a thunderstorm. Yeah, we got a thunderstorm going on. Okay. And I like rain. We need rain. We just don't need a whole bunch. You know, rain, like everything else, you know, you don't need a whole lot of it. You just need the right amount. It's kind of like one of those things where you don't, you know, I love strawberry cheesecake, but in moderation. I love Krispy Kreme donuts, but in moderation. And rain, I don't mind it. I like it in moderation. I don't like it too little. I don't like it too much, you know. So, yeah, we do got a thunderstorm going on. So I may have to end the show early, depending on how bad thunder and lightning and all that good stuff's going on. But we'll see. But we'll see. I'm sorry. Noah's Ark. I don't believe in it yet, but we'll see. But, you know, it's you know, these next couple of days is going to be, I don't unprecedented, I guess what I can tell you. And I think this is one of those things where you have to tell the kids, tell your children what's going on, because you don't want to keep them in the dark. And I mean, you know, children are going to ask you questions. And the thing that, you know, my thing is, I'm gonna tell them the truth, because they need to know. Because I don't want to hide this thing from them, because you know they gotta know. I mean, they look at TV like the rest of us. I mean, what are you doing? It's just right. Just tell them. You tell them what you know, and then just, you know, be honest with them. So I you know, told my kids what's going on, and we probably won't start getting ready for this probably in a couple of days. So we shall see how this turns out. So like I said, this is supposed to hit us. They got last time I saw on TV, it's supposed to hit here Monday or Tuesday. So, I will let you know whether or not we're going to have a show next week or not. We'll see. Hopefully, we will. My goal is to be back next week, but, you know, I can't control nature, so, you know, we'll see how that works out. So, this is about a 12-minute clip. And this is a clip I was telling you about earlier, that New Orleans lost about half of its black population. This is a long clip, but it's an interesting clip. It's got a lot of information in it. So I'll play this, the Iraq, and then I'll probably play the other one, which is about a 2-minute clip. That's the one with Kanye in it. And then I may just have to shut down early, depending on how this thunderstorm goes. You know, there was a time when I was doing this show on Tuesday nights that it was like every Tuesday it would rain for some reason. But then I had a little spot in between where it stopped raining, and I think now it's going back to where it's going to be raining every Tuesday night. I don't know if that's a sign or not. Maybe that's a sign that the angels up in heaven crying over my material. I don't know. Nah. No. Anywho, this is clip number 4, and we're going to play this, and I'll be right back.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Jessica Dever in Baltimore. This week marks the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. It also marks the 8th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And a new report found that African American New Orleans residents continue to be disproportionately affected by high unemployment. Nearly half of them are unemployed. And also, African American households are earning 50% less than their white counterparts. Meanwhile, much of the city public education and housing has been privatized or demolished. That's from the Katrina Pain Index of 2013 by Bill Quigley. Now joining us to talk about this is Greg Palast. Greg Palast is a BBC investigative reporter, and he investigated for Democracy Now! The real causes behind Hurricane Katrina in a film called Big Easy to Big Empty. Thank you for joining us, Greg.
Glad to be with you.
So, Greg, what is the connection between this 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and the 8th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina?
plenty. For those who know Greg Palast as an investigative reporter, most people know that I uncovered that Catherine Harris knocked tens of thousands of people off the voter rolls of Florida in the 2000 election, thereby handing the election to George Bush. People were illegally called felons when their only crime was voting while black. It was an ethnic cleansing of the voter rolls. When Martin Luther King stood up before the Washington Monument 50 years ago this week, he said, "I have a dream that black folk in Alabama and Mississippi and in the South will be able to cast a ballot." Well, 50 years later, we're still asking that question. Of course, we've eliminated the white sheets and the Ku Klux Klan as the threat. It's now spreadsheets and ethnic cleansing. Now, I did the investigation of the ethnic cleansing of the voter rolls of Florida. And by the way, that spread to Louisiana and Georgia. But I also look at the ethnic cleansing of another town, New Orleans, for Democracy Now. And what I found was just stunning. You have to put these two things together. You have to put the ethnic cleansing of the voter rolls of Florida together with the ethnic cleansing that happened and is going on in New Orleans and Louisiana with Hurricane Katrina just a cover, an excuse. That's all it is. And what you get away, take away from this is that King's dream was announced 50 years ago, but 8 years ago in New Orleans is when the dream drowned. And here's what I mean. I've discovered that Louisiana State University's Hurricane Center sent an emergency request to the White House more than a year before the levees broke, before Katrina. And Dr. Ivor von Heerden, the deputy of the Hurricane Center, contacted George Bush's senior counsel at the White House in a long discussion. He said, "New Orleans is going to drown. Not maybe, not will. We don't even need a hurricane." Remember, and by the way, Hurricane Katrina never touched New Orleans. It went 30 miles east. It was simply a storm surge. He said, "We cannot handle even a storm surge in New Orleans. The levees are too low. The levees are built wrong. And not only that, but you built a canal for the oil companies, which is bringing the Gulf of Mexico right to our doorstep. This city is going to drown unless you bring in the Army Corps of Engineers to correct this." But the Army Corps of Engineers, remember, in 2004 was in Iraq. They weren't there for the American people. They were there, you know, to blow up bridges and then rebuild them over the Tigris River. So what happened was, is that all the warnings of Dr. von Heerden, and I got to tell you, it's not like these were secret things. British television, where I work for BBC TV, 30 days before New Orleans drowned, just 30 days, von Heerden said on British television, "This city could be underwater in a month." Exactly 30 days later, it was underwater. This is not some shock and some surprise. Now, what does this have to do with Martin Luther King and the rights of African Americans to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and democracy? Okay, life and liberty was lost. If this was somewhere else, if this was not an African American city, an overwhelmingly African American city, it would have been protected. I'm speaking to you right now from near West Hampton Beach, which is where the movie stars go for the summer and the real estate brokers and the venture capitalists and financial vultures hang out for the summer. This area was wiped out by a hurricane twice. And both times, the United States federal government evacuated people, took responsibility. No one's ever hurt here in this rich beach area. Bill Clinton's just down the road. He's, you know, he doesn't even get his flip-flops wet when there's a hurricane. And furthermore, every single house here, and I'm not, when I say houses, I mean mansions, these beach mansions, every one of them was replaced by the federal government at the public cost, even with hundreds of truckloads of sand brought in so that the venture capitalists and the Democratic Party donors could get their tans. What happened in New Orleans? I got to tell you, according to a United States federal court judgment, von Heerden was correct. there was something called the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet Canal, which created basically a highway for the water surge from Katrina, a highway for that surge. It was insane. It was just an invitation for a tidal wave. There was never a hurricane, but there was a tidal wave that hit New Orleans, which knocked over those levees. It was the responsibility of the federal government. And the only reason the federal government did that, by the way, built this stupid canal, which basically drowned New Orleans. It was a shotgun rifle. It was like a rifle barrel pointed right at the city. It was because oil companies wanted to save time. They didn't want to take the Mississippi River all the way to the Gulf, which winds all the way around. You know, the Old Man River goes in all kinds of crazy curves. So they built a straight canal for the oil tankers, so the oil tankers could save a day or two on travel down to the Gulf. That's what it was all about. So just oil tankers could save a day or two. The city of New Orleans drowned. The federal courts determined that's exactly what happened. That's the science of it, and ordered the federal government to rebuild the homes of the African Americans who lost their homes, because this was something that was done by the oil companies and the federal government. That's a court ruling. But the federal government, if it loses a court case, cannot be required to pay unless Congress agrees and appropriates the money, unless the president asks. Barack Obama never asked for a dime to rebuild the homes that were lost, the people of the city of New Orleans. Yes, he rebuilt the homes of all the movie stars in West Hampton, but not a single home in the city of New Orleans. I want to repeat that. The federal government has never rebuilt any homes for the people in the city of New Orleans. They gave them formaldehyde-filled trailers. They spread them all over the country, and they drowned them. Not only were 2,000 people drowned by this horrific negligence, willful negligence of the federal government, when they knew in advance this would happen.
Well, Greg, let's talk about the reconstruction and the recovery effort in New Orleans. And specifically, let's talk about the African-American community and how they've fared. What has it been like for them down there post-Katrina?
Horrific. I got to tell you, look, this was, as far as the Caucasian and elite leadership of New Orleans, that's both black and white. Remember that when we talk about there's no African-American community in New Orleans, just so you know. There is an elite black community, which is from the old Creole community, which includes, by the way, the old black slaveholders. There are a lot of black people who own slaves in the New Orleans area before the Civil War. And you have that old black elite and the old white elite, and then you have the average African-American worked those plantations and lived in places like the Lower Ninth Ward, which, by the way, had the highest concentration of African-American home ownership in America until Katrina. What happened was all these people were shipped out, put on buses, not even told where they were going, and sent to Texas, sent to Baltimore, sent all over and sent to Florida. No way to return, no plan to return. People weren't allowed to return to their own homes, not even allowed to put trailers on their own property. Not allowed. So when we talk about New Orleans recovering in the sense of like it's up to 70-80% of its original pre-flood population, that's not the same people. They're gone. Half of the African-American population in New Orleans is gone forever, dispersed. They don't have the money or the ability to get back. They don't have their homes back. They don't have the ability to get back. And so in terms of work, almost all the work of reconstruction was done by people who came in from Salvador and from Latin America, cheap labor, and then the technical labor came from the north. So basically, it was all carpetbag labor, and local African Americans lost their jobs. In our film, which, by the way, if you go to gregpalace.com, you can download it for free this week, Big Easy to Big Empty. You'll see that we had a young black man who stood on a bridge for 4 days while helicopters flew over, ignoring him and the people he's with. A grandfather near him gave his last bottle of water to his grandchildren, and then he died of dehydration on that bridge. Then Stephen was put on a bus, separated from his family. He never saw his children and his wife for weeks. He had no idea where they were shipped off to. And then he was dumped in Texas. He ended up taking a job in Texas because his job at the Marriott Hotel in New Orleans was taken over by immigrant workers who would be willing to work non-union and at half his pay. So you had basically the construction work was done almost entirely by immigrant workers as opposed to the black population which had lived there. So the, basically, the black population was cleansed out of the city and off the voter rolls. So that you actually don't forget, this is also another way to get rid of, to use a natural disaster as a cover to, in effect, cleanse the voter rolls as well. The state went from Democratic governor to Republican, Bobby Jindal. Altogether, the New Orleans went from a black city to a white and Latin American city. It's, you know, it's a very different city than it was.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Greg.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for joining us on The Real News Network.
Okay, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to grab this phone call. It is thundering and lightning here, so let me just grab this phone call. We've got one more clip to play, and then I may just cut a few minutes early because I don't want to get hit by a bolt of lightning and then get the mutant ability of shooting lightning bolts out of my fingertips. That'd be cool though, but I don't want that right now. Hello, caller, welcome to the show.
Greetings. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I didn't know you were going to bring my line in. I want to say this. I was just listening to the show and listening to that last news or interview excerpt that you played. It really took all the wind out of me. It really did. And I'm so crestfallen by it. I had questions and comments for you, but I don't have them anymore. Listening to that, it reconciled everything that I have been thinking about Katrina, every single thing. And I want to ask this question to you. Having heard that, be mindful of that, having heard that, I was thinking to myself 2 days ago, how these hurricanes are so precise. And now that I'm familiar with HARP, now that I understand what it is, this weather modification, and how it is so accurate in that it is able, for example, 4 days ago, and I've been watching this storm Irma closely, 4 days ago they said that Irma may go into New York and perhaps Maine, right? And I said to myself, okay, who lives in Maine and New York off of this East Coast? I said, I have never heard of anything being historically extremely damaging or dangerous in that area. And then I thought about it. I said, if in the next 4 days, Irma goes contrary to what they're saying is going on this European, weather system that they have on the internet where you can check it and it shows you where the eye is and the direction or the path. I said, if it changes directions that are contrary to what it's going now, nobody is ever going to be able to tell me anything about weather modification and this new war. It changed directions. And now it's headed towards Florida.
With the breach of three levees protecting New Orleans,
and
the
North
landscape
Carolina.
Of the city has changed dramatically, tragically, and perhaps irreversibly. There's now over 25 feet of water where there was once city streets and thriving.
Hello?
With the breach of three levees protecting New Orleans, the landscape of the city has changed dramatically, tragically, and perhaps
Hello?
I can still hear you.
Oh, okay. Well, I heard something else, like a news clip come in. But anyway, let me cut this off. What I want to say is, It's just so strange to me.
With the breach of three levees protecting New Orleans, the landscape of the city has changed dramatically.
I'm going to just go ahead and yield the mic because I continue to hear a news clip coming in while I'm speaking. But I just wanted to say that I'm sorry?
You must be having, I was saying, you must be having some type of technical difficulty.
Oh, I probably am. But anyway, can I get your opinion on how this storm is so precise and where it hits where the majority of black people live in the United States on the East Coast?
Mm. You know, one thing about that, from me thinking about it,
with the breach of three levees protecting New Orleans, the landscape of the city has changed dramatically.
Brother Anthony. But as I was saying, knowing a little bit about this heart machine that they have that will...
With the breach of three levees protecting New Orleans, the landscape of the city has changed dramatically.
Wow. They really don't want you to say what you need to say. I can tell you that.
That's
gonna
keep
it real for you. I'm done. No one can convince me differently. How is it that every time we get ready to talk about the plight of black people, here this Cubs comes? I just don't think that is by coincidence. I'm sorry.
Mm-mm. No, I'm in 100% agreement with you. Ain't no way in the world.
Mm-mm. Wow.
But, you know, one thing I
with the breach of three levees protecting New Orleans, the landscape of the city has changed dramatically.
You know, we have to do everything that we can to unify and save ourselves, because these people ain't trying to save us. They're not trying to save us. They're trying to cut us off at every turn, every corner, every avenue. They try to cut us off from being successful. They try to cut us off just from surviving. They try to cut us off